This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
WGR.
It's hard to find an expert more dedicated than John Clayton.
Sports Radio 550.
He's the consummate pro.
It's John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
With Chopin the Bulldog.
John Clayton is being brought to you by Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you. And by Goya. If it's Goya, it has to be good.
And thinking about how the Seahawks were in Cleveland last week, as were you, by the way. You could have.
Yeah, I know. I thought about.
I met up with John Clayton.
I was going to invite John to come out to Gilmore Academy to watch the kid play. But
John, would you have done that? Would you have accepted Bulldog's invitation to go watch high school hockey last weekend?
Well, I mean, the question would be, is he still going to be playing at 11 o'clock at night when I got there?
Yeah. Actually, it was Saturday night, so I don't know when you.
Yeah, I got in Saturday night, 11 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. No, we were out for dinner then. Yeah, but I guess I could have invited you for that.
That is a short trip. If you're there Saturday night at 11, and then you probably left right after the game.
Oh, no, you can't believe the trip that I had, because it was a trip that actually was 10,000 miles. Now, I need the miles for my airline, so that's good, but there was a little bit of a bad part of it. You know, first I flew to Cleveland from Seattle, then I flew from Cleveland to San Francisco because I'd scheduled my return a couple weeks before. Then I realized, hey, there's an owner's meeting in Fort Lauderdale, so I took a red eye to Fort Lauderdale.
Come on.
I landed, you know, and got to the hotel, and then my wife called and said that, you know, because, you know, she's in a wheelchair because of MS, and she calls me up and was out of breath and says, I can't breathe. I've got to call 911.
Oh, no.
So then I spent 25 minutes on the phone with my airline to get me back, and so then I flew from Fort Lauderdale to Denver, Denver to San Fran, San Fran to Seattle, and literally it was like 8,000 miles in like 28 hours or something like that, and 10,000 for the whole trip.
Wow, so you didn't even maybe leave the Fort Lauderdale airport?
No, I actually went to the Fort Lauderdale courtyard airport and was just setting up there to do my show, and
okay.
It was like 9:30 for my 10 o'clock show, and then I get the call from the wife, and so then I'm scrambling right now to try to see if I could get back, and you know, literally, I missed the first segment of the first part of the first segment of the show while I was trying to get the app all lined up to be able to do it, and it's like, but you know, the good ending to the story, even though I'm completely exhausted, even as late as Thursday, is my wife was able to make it back home. She is breathing well. She just needed some potassium because her potassium level was low, so she's fine. She's probably better than I am.
Wow, John. That open we play talks where the anchor is like, the dedication. I mean, this is an example of it.
Right.
I mean, it sounds like maybe it's a joke or something in the commercial, but this is an example. That's amazing. Like, you spend so much time in the air. I was going to make a point about how much distance the Seahawks have already covered this year. Like, you went to Pittsburgh, too, and maybe somewhere else. Like, you've been in the air a lot just for the Seahawk job.
Yeah, I mean, Pittsburgh, Arizona, Cleveland. Go to Atlanta on next Sunday. Still have to make trips to Carolina and Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and then shorter trips going to L.A. and San Francisco. But, of course, you know, with the San Francisco trip, that's a Monday night, so I'm going to probably pop to a game, and I'm hoping to see if there's a good Bills game or a good Kansas City Chiefs game to be able to go to.
On Sunday somewhere else and then flying to San Francisco on Monday.
You
got to love it. The Seahawks are good. That's a great Monday night game. I didn't know that was on the schedule. Seattle and San Francisco, they still have two to play with each other. And the Seahawks have played the Rams once. That was a great game, too, a night game. So it's going to be interesting there. And you're seeing the Rams really kind of scramble here with the Ramsey trade. And like the passing stats last week against San Francisco just look like as bad as any team.
Yeah, what's happened is that people have figured out the offense. and how to stop the offense. And with either the weapons, the problems that they have an inability right now of beating it. Like, for example, I mean, Sean McVay, I think, is one of the brightest coaching minds, I think, to come into the league, in my opinion, since John Gruden. And maybe I'm missing a few guys. You know, obviously, you know, Bill Walsh was there before John Gruden. But since John Gruden, I think he's one of the best offensive minds I've seen. You know, Doug Peterson's in there. Andy Reid's in there. But, you know, what's happened is, and it started in the Detroit game at the beginning of December of last year, is that, you know, Matt Patricia put a six-man front. They were at a 6-1 defense with the cornerbacks, you know, defensive backs in quarters coverage, because that gave them the ability to take away the run. And if you take away the run, it takes so much out of their offense, because Jared Goff is good, but he's not great. And when you force him to be more a thrower than just the guy handing off and mixing it up, it takes things away. So that carried over into the Chicago game, the Philadelphia game, and then when Bill Belichick had 2 weeks to work on that, then he came up with a version of the Bears defense, you know, the 46 defense. It was, again, a 6-1 scheme, and it completely shut him down. And so as late as this, they didn't make any adjustments until the Seahawk game. They started to use more two tight ends to try to take care of the extra blockers. That didn't necessarily work. And then, you know, last week, the four-man rush of the 49ers just destroyed them. And, you know, Todd Gurley's not the same. Andrew Whitworth is not the same. You know, they've almost had to change their entire interior blocking scheme, so their offensive line goes from great to terrible. So it's a mess.
While we're there, what do you make of the Ramsey acquisition? Do you think it's more likely than not that he signs an extension there? I know, you know, they could always franchise him too, if they want to, you know, keep him for more than just this rental period here the rest of this year. But what do you think is going to happen there?
Well, the rental period actually is going to be a year and a half, because, you know, he's on the last year of his rookie contract. Next year he goes into the 50-year option at $13 million plus.
Okay.
So they buy time before they have to do anything. But it's a desperation move, and I can see it, but also it's one that is very troublesome, because I mean, you knew that they were going to have trouble getting deals with Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib, and ironically, Talib goes on IR Monday. They trade Marcus Peters, who was in the fifth-year option of his contract at $9+ million, and so now they get Ramsey, who is an upgrade from Peters, but that still puts them thin on the other side with Troy Hill. And so this is good, because now they're better at the one cornerback position and can shut out one side of the field. The bad part is now with the injuries are mounting up, they're thin at linebacker. Clay Matthews is out. They have problems right now at safety because John Johnson went on the injured reserve list. They're down five starters on defense right now. And think about what they have to do this week. Literally, with Talib on the injured reserve, 75% of their secondary has to get together new in 1 week.
Be tough for the defending NFC champs. John Clayton with us here on the Westher Hotline. The Rams at Atlanta this week. Let's talk about the Bills and the Dolphins. John, we know the Dolphins are winless. I mean, they're always bad teams, but this one is being described everywhere as like one of the all-time worst, if not the all-time worst. We had a guest on the station earlier this week from Miami who said something to the effect of about two-thirds of the team might not even be in the league if they were not on the Dolphins roster. You see that the point spreads speak for themselves. The Bills are a favorite, the likes of which they have not been since they were going to Super Bowls in the early 90s. Just what's your way of putting the Dolphins into context?
I wouldn't call it Shark Tank, but it's the worst tanking job I've seen maybe since its neighbor over with the Florida Marlins. I mean, it is just horrendous. Because when you think about, and again, this is when you try to do a tanking job, and I know Commissioner Roger Goodell says, no, we don't see any evidence of tanking. Well, it's like, yeah, well, you're not looking, because it's a tank job. Because, you know from watching the Bills and every other team in the league, the five most important positions are quarterback, wide receiver, cornerback, left tackle, and pass rusher. They got rid of them all. I mean, you know, they're down with, you know, old Ryan Fitzpatrick, a terrible Josh Rosen. You know, they traded away Laremy Tunsil. They traded away Kenny Still, and last year they traded away Jarvis Landry. You know, they've traded. I mean, they have cornerbacks. I mean, that's okay. They're okay there.
Cameron Wake is gone. Right.
Cameron Wake is gone. Yeah, and you know, you think about this. I mean, when they cut, and I know this is not a big deal, John Denny, the long snapper, they're now down to two Pro Bowl or players who have been to the Pro Bowl, and that's it. So they have no star power, nothing there. They're probably going to trade running back Kenny Drake. I mean, it's horrible. And so Now you can, I mean, what, was it a 17-point difference in the odds this week?
Yeah, 16.5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's like in a normal game, and again, you know that I'm now advocating that Bills are going to make the playoffs, okay, because of the AFC, their defense, everything else, the coaching, you name it, and the depth that I think the Bills have, they're making the playoffs. But you can't guarantee against a good team that the Bills could score 17 points. Now they're 17-point favorites against the team, and they're going to score well over 20 points.
Right. The total is 40.5. It ticked up a little with Fitzpatrick being named the starter for Miami. I think, you know, he might produce more points, maybe for both teams with his style. But if it's 40 and 16.5, you have like a 28-12 kind of game, and the Bills score 30 points. That doesn't happen very often.
No, and this is one, they're so bad that you can score points and you can do so many different things, and you figure that, you know, you just go in, try to run the ball, get out of there as fast as possible, and get the win. You know, but, you know, you look at that team, they're 0-6, they get outscored by 25 points a game, if not more, and then you look at their, you know, their numbers are terrible in just about everything, and there's just nothing left. I mean, it's like, and they've already played four home games. Think about this. How would you like to be 0-6, and you're already 0-4 at home and only have four home games left?
The thing, too, so you want to run the ball because it's safer and you don't want to beat yourself, but you also don't want to shorten the game for the underdog opponent. And I think I'd like to put this in front of you, John. One thing about this Bills season that's, to me, really cool and a really good sign is their pass-to-run numbers. Like they are toward the Chiefs' end of the spectrum here. Not quite the Chiefs, but close. As a team that is throwing the ball in a lot higher percentage of their plays. And that was something, like, I've been needing that from the Bills, especially when they drafted this quarterback, because, you know, what did you need him for if you're just going to hand the ball off? It's been ground and pound, and then even under Sean McDermott, it's looked like that. You know how football teams take a lot of pride in their rushing prowess. This team has certainly done that, just not won enough games. So there's a probably, if not for sure, a shift in philosophy that has happened here that I think helps explain their season.
Well, has that been a consistent thing? Now, obviously, you're going to be throwing the ball more when you're down 16 points to the Jets and you make that great fourth quarter comeback. You're not going to be on the ground for that. And then Singletary, of course, was a little banged up. I mean, and so that may have, you know, put them more in the passing set. But has it been a consistent thing when everybody's healthy, they pass it?
No, right. I mean,
okay, good.
The Jet game, the first game of the year, they had a pass play on their first 18 plays.
Wow.
Right.
So it really, even in the preseason, there were indications of this, but you just don't know whether to trust the preseason. Or at least I would say that. So, I mean, I don't want to state it as fact that there's a shift here in philosophy, but it looks like one.
Yeah, they look very much like a team trying to figure out if their quarterback can play at a very high level, which is why you draft a guy seventh, right?
Yeah, that'd be part of it,
When the defense, and again, we can't just say this for this year. We have to say the same thing about last year. The defense has been the most consistent thing on the Bills the last 2 years because, you know, it rated as among the best last year, it's rating among the best this year, and it's holding teams down to a manageable level, you know, under 20 points a game. And that's great because now, I mean, you can try more things as long as you don't get the turnovers. And if you prevent doing the turnovers and you're doing safer, quicker type of passes that isn't going to break the balance, then you can really do some good things.
How about around the league, Jacksonville? We already talked about Ramsey going to the Rams. How about Jacksonville getting two number ones for Ramsey? Like, that was thought to be maybe a lofty price, but they set it and they stuck to it. And just when it seemed like maybe they weren't going to trade him, the owner was talking about it, everything settling down just last week, John. There he goes off for two number ones. Doug Marrone sounds a little chafed at having to answer for it because it wasn't his decision. How do you see things playing out in Jacksonville? Obviously, the picks are great to have, but are they, for all intents and purposes, toast this year, you think?
I think they're toast, because you know they've had too many Pro Bowl players leave the team now. I mean, you know, Telvin Smith that didn't return to the team. He, you know, wanted to retire for a year. They got rid of Tayshaun Gibson. You know, they lose Malik Collins. You know, there's too much out of that defense right now. But I throw this back to you because you can appreciate this more than anything else. Watching Doug Marrone being asked about the Ramsey trade, him turning to a PR guy says, "Don't we have somebody from upstairs to be able to answer that?" I mean, how much did that sound like, Doug Marrone when times were tough, trying to answer questions for Tim Grant?
Well, it is familiar, you know.
Yeah,
it
is a separation. Remind you of that?
A separation between Marone and his boss.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps.
Yeah, because if you're Doug Marone right now, you're sitting there 2-4. I mean, you don't have the one of the best cornerbacks in the league. Of course, they didn't have him for 3 weeks because I think, you know, his back injury was, and of course, the back injury is really diagnosed as, I don't want to be back.
Right. So it was a I don't want to be back injury.
I don't want to be back. It's like, I don't want to be back with the Jaguars, so I'm back is my big issue right now. Coming back is my big issue. So now you're Doug Marone, you're sitting there, you get 2 first-round picks, and then you realize Tom Coughlin and Doug Marone are probably not going to be the guys making those picks.
Right. John Clayton with us. So the Patriots keep going. They have, you know, the way the schedule fell this year, like what these AFC East teams are confronted with, it's so soft. It will get tougher for New England, but what is that really to say? How big is the gap? Did I ask you this last time? I guess I wasn't on last week, but the gap between the Bills and the Patriots. So we all know, John, the deal. Like, we all know to take the Patriots super seriously and respect the history and everything like that. But do we know for sure this year that they're way better than this Bills team? Like, what do you expect to have happen between the two teams and the division and whatever else?
Well, I mean, I would say, you know, when you look on offense right now, I mean, there's probably better things happening with the Bills offense than the Patriots offense because they don't have anything at tight end. I know they just re-signed Ben Watson, but he took a big pay cut to come back. Then they've got injuries at the wide receiver position. They've got 2 holes on the offensive line. You know, their running game hasn't been consistent. But the schedule is such that, I mean, the gap, maybe it's not as far as the talent, is, you know, I'd say 4 games. Because let's say, you know, the way that schedule looks, because remember, it was set up so easy for them. The first 8 games were against teams last year that didn't have winning records. All right, so then you come back and they play only 5 Tier 1 quarterbacks, lowest in the league, and 4 of the games are at home. So it's like, you know, those are going to be mostly wins. So they're looking like a, you know, 14-15 win team where, again, taking advantage of the easy schedule and doing a good job. I mean, the Bills are probably at the 10 or 11 range. So I'd say the gap is 4 games. I'm not saying that as far as talent, but as far as reality, the way the schedule breaks.
Okay. We'll see what happens with the Texans and the Chiefs, too, because those are the two teams the Patriots play that the Bills don't. The Bills have beaten Tennessee, which is their counterpart to Houston, and then they'll have Denver here, which is a different test than Kansas City. So if it is closer than what you predict, those two games could have something to do with that.
But again, I mean, just think from the idea, it's like, I know it's disappointing that there's still a big gap as far as wins for the Patriots. Again, that's, again, byproduct of schedule more than anything else. But I think the fact that, you know, the schedule is so favorable. I mean, what was it, the 360 right now is the schedule right now remaining for the Buffalo Bills and for the entire league? It's, you know, it's almost not a historic easy schedule. I mean, if my memory goes right, the greatest show on turf, what was it, the 2099 Rams, had like a 343. It was one of the lowest ever. And right now, you know, the Bills are challenging it. And what you're looking at, and again, if you go back into history, you know, you can see there's a parallel between 2004 and 2006 that's affecting things. And what it comes down to is in 2004, the AFC was 44-20 against the NFC, and you had there in 2006 it was 40-23. That's in the mid-60s as far as a percent. Right now it's 19-10, pretty much on the same vein. So what that means is, it like that year the Giants had 13 wins, and then everybody else was probably at about 10. You had divisions at 9-8, and that's the way it's going to go this year. But of course, you know, the Bills are going to be the benefactor of being a wild card team with a good record.
It's 19-10 for the AFC?
This year it's for the NFC.
For the NFC.
19-10 for the NFC.
Okay, right. But the Bills, the AFC East plays the NFC East, and that's softer.
Well, and see, that's why what you can see is that the NFC East is now vulnerable because, you know, they're now 2-5 against the NFC North. And so what you're looking at is probably a 9-10 win type of team winning a division, whether it's going to be Philadelphia or Dallas.
Right.
You know, and the loser of that game on Sunday night is going to be 3-4. And so, you know, they're all going to get beat up, and the best that division is going to be able to produce is no wild card team and a number four seed. So you can see that happening. But also, you know, they're vulnerable because Washington's so bad, the Giants aren't good, and so there's wins there for the AFC East.
I'm glad we got to that Sunday night game. Do you think is there a 10% chance, less than that, Jerry Jones does something drastic with Garrett if they lose at home to Philadelphia?
No. Not going to happen. That's just not his nature. I mean, he'll play it out, give him the chance to at least get to the playoffs. You know, he didn't get the contract extension, and so, you know, I think he wants to be true to him because, I mean, the one thing he likes about Jason is that Jason's not going to argue anything that he, Steven, or the front office does as far as personnel. He'll take the personnel that's there and try to coach it up and be a good employee, and he likes that, and he appreciates that, and he likes Jason Garrett. He wants Jason Garrett to win, but the problem and the roster that they have should play better than what it's playing right now. But I think we all, in fact, I love the quote that Jerry had after the game, you know, because they get off to a 3-0 start and they're blowing out everybody by 14 points, and then they come back and they lose to 3 and they're averaging 18.3 points a game, and he comes back and says, well, we're not an elite team. Well, we thought you were with the easy games that you started off with, but now you don't look like an elite team.
Everybody's running more play action, like the data says to do that, and Dallas was early. They played different caliber opponents, but they were early and they stopped doing it. And I saw today that Garrett was asked to explain why at the press conference. He said, I'm going to have to look into it, something like that. Like, he just didn't even have an answer ready for it. At least Sean McDermott, what McDermott does in those situations is say, look, I'm just focused on the next game. When he gets a question about the last game that he doesn't like, it's just he's got it. He knows to say, I'm just focused on the next game. Garrett couldn't even do that.
No, so, in fact, what people are starting to speculate is that in the last 3 weeks he's taken over the play calling. Because, I mean, one of the criticisms is always on him is that he gets too conservative. And you're right, in the first three games they were throwing the ball all over the place. I mean, it was great to watch because it was so different than any Cowboy team that we've seen. But, of course, you're doing it against, you know, non-FCF schools. So it's like, and so when you're beating Appalachian State and guys like that, it's one where it's like you can do just about anything that you want. But now against the better teams, they're playing more conservative. How much of that's Garrett play calling, or how much is that demanding Kellen Moore to do it?
Thanks, Sean. All the best. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks.
There you go, John Clayton. His weekly appearance with us is brought to you by Goya. If it's Goya, it has to be good. And by Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.